James Damore's now infamous internal memo questioning Google's approach to equalising the treatment of men and women at the company has raised questions about just how modern the high-tech world is. Last year, 16% of computer science graduates in this country were women. Just 6.5% of software developers are women. 200 years ago, Ada Lovelace pioneered programming. The Second World War obliged the government to rely on women, especially at Bletchley Park. Margaret Bullen worked on the Heath Robinson and Colossus code-breaking machines, and interviewed in 2014, she recalled the division of labour.
I can remember on one occasion, I think it must have been the time of the Japanese War, and we were working very late to get the message ready to be decoded, being surrounded by gold-hatted men, you know, obviously generals or something, just standing there waiting. There was me and one other girl was doing it, waiting until we'd wired it up, and then they could take it round, I presume, to the Wrens, and the Wrens were... I really don't know. We didn't know what anyone else was doing. You just knew what was happening in your little environment.
Even so, when the men came back, women remained. In the early post-war years, Britain's burgeoning computer industry was a female one. Yet as Mari Hicks, the author of the book Programmed Inequality, has been telling me, they were increasingly sidelined.
The involvement of women was extremely high, and it wasn't just because men were away at the front. Women had been doing calculation work and computing work with pre-electronic computers for decades. So they're all of the first programmers and computer operators.
How sophisticated was the work they were undertaking?
Very sophisticated. The women who were programming these early machines literally had to write the book. They had to make it up as they went along. They had to even troubleshoot the hardware to account for why there were bugs. And these machines were absolutely critical to the Allied war effort.
What changed when war ended?
The women who had been doing this work in many ways carried over. They were working with electromechanical machines, and also women went right into working with electronic machines in offices. And it really isn't until quite a bit later, the late 50s and into the 1960s, you start to see this pronounced shift towards trying to get young men into the field and trying to actually defeminize the field, not only get women out of it, but raise the status and the pay of computing.
This is a period where the moment a woman decided to get married, she would effectively be writing herself out of a job. How much was that a disadvantage for women who were looking to pursue a career in computing?
That was a huge disadvantage for women because the pay structures and the promotion structures all took for granted that they were going to drop out of the workforce. So it was sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Women left the workforce in a lot of cases because there was nowhere else for them to go. Dame Stephanie Shirley, for instance, who did amazing things for the British computing industry, and she does this by scooping up many of these women programmers who were forced out of their jobs.
What about the hardware? What was happening in terms of the computers themselves that perhaps contributed to some of these things?
The hardware is becoming more and more complex, which means it's necessary to get more people programming to really maximize the potential of these faster and more complicated machines. And this is bad news for the British computing industry because the women who had been doing this programming work, they're getting pushed aside. And young men are not really coming in at a high enough rate. So there is a persistent programmer labor shortage. The need of the government to have bigger and more centralized machines means that they essentially force the remaining British computing companies to merge down into one big mega company called ICL. And then they say to ICL, look, you have to produce these types of massive mainframes during a period when this sort of huge mainframe is on the way out. It had a very powerful negative effect on the fortune of the British computing industry. And then it had reverberating effects on the British economy as a whole.
Was there anything you saw in the archives while researching the book that really opened your eyes?
I had been reading about this class of workers in the civil service called the machine grades. Then I had been reading about another class of workers called the excluded grades, and I didn't understand how the two related to each other. And all of a sudden, I found a document that made it very clear that, in fact, the machine grades were all women. And the reason that the name had changed to the excluded grades was because they were being specifically excluded from the provisions of the Equal Pay Act that came into the British Civil Service in 1954. And the reason for this was because the government said, we're not going to raise these women's pay scales to the men's pay scales because so few men are doing those jobs that the women's rate, the lower rate, has now become the market rate for these jobs. And as a result, I later came to find out this meant that, in fact, the majority of women working for the government did not get equal pay when the government brought equal pay into the civil service.
That's Mari Hicks, who'll be teaching on the subject of the British computing industry and the role of women at the University of Wisconsin-Madison this autumn. She's recommending her students read Let IT Go, the autobiography of Dame Stephanie Shirley. She set up an IT business back in the 1960s and was a pioneer of UK computing. I've been speaking to Dame Shirley about the barriers which led her to resign from the civil service, and to Marley de Alwis, the CEO of Code First Girls, an organisation aiming to train thousands of women in coding. What did Amali make of the Google memo?
I wish I was more shocked than I was. And I've got to be honest, it just made me cringe from beginning to end. And I found myself almost wanting to turn school teacher, print it out and take a red pen to it. It's a real shame that we're still having these discussions.
Is there potentially something encouraging about it, though, that this might be a reaction to the way that the company is changing?
It is an old saying that, you know, people don't react to things which are staying the same. People react to things which are changing. So there is something encouraging about that. He himself states in his memo that he is reacting against what he feels is the forward norm of where Google is viewing diversity and how that's looking. So that is absolutely promising.
Dame Stephanie Shirley, when you heard about it, did it feel horribly familiar?
Well, it took me back a bit. I was quite surprised that in the 21st century one should have such statements. It is quite unacceptable to refer to any subset of people as biologically inferior. Google was quite correct to fire the guy without any doubt about it. We do have, in the UK at least, that battle to stop undervaluing our female workforce. In my first job, there were two pay scales. There was one for men and one for women, and the women were certainly quite a bit lower than the men.
You were working, I understand, at the time for the post office. So all kinds of communications developments, including computing.
Yes. So very early on, no programming manuals. You talk about writing the book. It was a different time.
But what was the catalyst for you deciding to go it alone?
I was sick and tired of coming up against the so-called glass ceiling. And while the civil service was one thing, I left to join a small company, which really was super. It was early in computers and it had all sorts of employment policies, but they were still sexist. And eventually something happened and I thought, up with this, I will not put. And overnight decided to hand in my notice and set up on my own. I'm very glad I did, actually. It worked out all right. But it was a social drive rather than a technical drive. I wanted opportunities for women.
Let me talk then with you, Amali, about what you're trying to do with Code First Girls, because by the sound of it, you're trying to, in a sense, recapture a moment that, from Mari's telling of history, was lost.
Absolutely. I would say we're trying the best that we can to flood the market with female tech talent. We've delivered about £2.5 million worth of free education over the last 2.5, 3 years, so taught over 5,000 women how to code for free. And we're about to launch our 2020 campaign, which is to teach 20,000 young women how to code for free. Our line is very much, you know, the market just isn't good enough. And actually, if we're serious about trying to increase diversity in tech, then we actually need to start doing something quite serious about that. You know, when we're thinking about what an impact technology has on our lives, you know, there is no such thing as a non-tech business these days. So how can we expect to create products, services, to create a future if we're not actually representing the people who are actually going to be using those products in those who build those products?
Software actually started from the clerical sector and was predominantly female. Think back to the coding ladies of the Bletchley Park.
Did you have a sense as that period progressed, once you'd started up your own business and you were doing very well, and yet the broader industry in some ways in Britain was starting to fall behind, did you have a sense that that was happening? And was there a frustration? Did you feel that there was a connection
no,
with the...
No, I didn't see that at all. People were laughing at me for even thinking that you could sell software. You know, at that time it was given away free with the hardware. You can't sell software, and certainly not a woman, you know. And when you were trying to be taken seriously in the business world, the sexism was such that the junior minister would be trying to pinch your bottom while you were trying to present a serious project.
What about the future? Do you think it is brighter for women in the tech industry than it has been in the recent past?
I don't know about the recent past, but certainly damn sight brighter than my day. Really, software is a very attractive way of life for anybody. It's exciting. It's always interesting. Who would want to do anything else?
Dame Stephanie Shirley and Amalie Dalwitz, who's Chief Executive of Code First Girls.